Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Where faith matters, the Rev and the Rabbi. Talk Radio 77 WABC.
Welcome back. I'm Rabbi Joseph Potasnik.
And I'm Reverend A.R. Bernard.
Reverend, we are privileged to have live in the studio with us the newly appointed Deputy Chief of Department of NYPD, the highest ranking Orthodox Jew in the department. History has been made. And we are privileged to have you, Inspector Taylor. You were Inspector Taylor. Now as chief, I always called you Inspector. Now I have to learn, you know, a whole new title for you. What an honor this is.
Well, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Chief. It's my honor.
Yeah.
So,
Rabbi, where are we going to start with this?
Well, I think the question is asked by so many of members of my community. What's a nice Jewish kid like you? How does someone with your background get involved with NYPD and rise to this very prominent role?
Well, Rabbi Potasnik, first, thank you so much, Rabbi Potasnik. Thank you so much, Reverend A.R. Bernard, for having me on, for recognizing the work that the men and women of the NYPD do every day to keep New York City safe. Thank you so much for your partnership, for your support, for your friendship, for always going above and beyond. To answer the question, I know you asked me, what's a nice Jewish boy doing in the police department? Rabbi Potasnik, they used to ask you, what's a nice Jewish boy like you doing on radio?
Or as a rabbi. Or going,
that's
becoming
a rabbi.
Becoming a rabbi.
Even. Exactly. No, since I was 14, 15 years old, I always loved the police department. I became a police explorer when I was 15 in the 61st Precinct, a great program that the NYPD still offers till today. It gives young people an opportunity to get a backstage pass to what it means to be a police officer, what it means to keep New York City safe. It just gave me a great glimpse into what I felt was my calling of public service. At 17, I was able to become an auxiliary police officer. I worked for the DA's office in Brooklyn State and became a cop. I got married young at 20, became a cop and just loved it ever since. Started in Brooklyn South. The opportunities you have to help people, the opportunities you have to serve every community, it's something that the police department gives you that no other career I see can give you. And they say when you're a New York City police officer, you know about diversity, they say when you're a New York City police officer, you're really one of everyone, whether it's a synagogue, whether it's a Buddhist temple, a church, a mosque. You know, just today at police headquarters, we had the pre-Ramadan celebration. It's a briefing for community leaders of the Muslim faith to demonstrate what the police department is doing to make sure that those who are celebrating, observing the holy month of Ramadan, they can worship safely. They can not only be safe, but they could feel safe. And one of the speakers today, Mohammed Bahi from the mayor's office, said that I must go to more mosques than I go to synagogues. That's how visible I am there in the Muslim community. And that's how it is. It's a tremendous city that we live in. And I'm so grateful to have this position to serve.
Well, Rabbi, you and I better contact the mayor ASAP and let him know that Officer Taylor here needs to do some public service announcements. He has sold me on the NYPD. I mean, wonderful the way you've expressed yourself in terms of your passion for policing in New York City. There are individuals here who say, I would never want to be a police officer. Yet you bring such a wonderful presentation of the dignity involved in that position. So that's my commentary, Rabbi. So we got to make sure.
What I find interesting is,
thank you.
Deputy Chief Taylor, wherever he goes, is a visible Jew. He wears a yarmulke on his head wherever he is. And it says much about acceptance within a department. It is diverse, but, you know, sometimes we've seen diversity, but it seems to include Jews. This is one where you see this real full display of people of different backgrounds, does it pose a problem at all when you're a Sabbath observer and being a member of NYPD?
So that's a great question. It's a question that I get asked often. And the answer is very simple. It does not present a problem whatsoever. The police department is very sensitive to religious observation, very sensitive to cultural sensitivities. For example, a Sikh officer is allowed to wear a turban with the city seal on the middle of the turban as their actual police cap. And that just shows how deep the department, the police department, wants to have that diversity. You know, from the mayor is a former police captain, only mayor in history to ever serve as a police officer, to go on to become mayor. The police commissioner Edward Caban, so just a tremendous leader who cares deeply about the individual police officer, individual as a person, you know, under the uniform. The chief of department, who I was actually just with just before I came on the radio today, the chief of department, Jeff Madry, someone who you see is a man of faith, a man of God, a man that sets the tone that be who you are, be proud of your religious observation, of the religious observance that you have. And it's just tremendous. And, you know, Deputy Commissioner of Community Affairs, Mark Stewart, he himself speaks about his own spirituality, his own strengths and how he built that strength and how the mayor saw something in him. You know, Commissioner Stewart used to be a detective with the mayor, and he retired after 20 years. He became a supervisor in the Manhattan DA's office, supervising violent crime squad. He retired from that to answer the call for public service a third time by becoming Deputy Commissioner of Community Affairs. And he says that when he got that phone call, he said he didn't see himself really taking that community affairs role. He saw himself more as enforcement. But he says that the mayor saw in him that community affairs role that he himself didn't see in himself. And if you think about it, how many people out there, how many individuals have that quality in them that they don't see themselves? When you're in the box, it's sometimes hard to see the box. But from the outside, people can see it. And we have tremendous, tremendous leadership in the police department that recognizes others' talents and brings others to different bureaus in the police department. There's so many opportunities in the police department. Of course, besides for patrol, detective work, community affairs, it's just a tremendous, tremendous responsibility of keeping New York City safe. Of course, the perpetual threat of terrorism. Police officers assigned to the Counterterrorism and Intelligence Bureau on how they're dedicated around the clock. It's a position that you have self-satisfaction, that you see you keeping people safe, whether it's a large detail, Times Square, New Year's Eve, the ball drop that we just had just about 2 months ago, whether it's the Celebrate Israel Parade down Fifth Avenue, Thanksgiving Parade, UNGA, you know, the United Nations General Assembly. We have almost 200 world leaders come to New York City. By the way, you know, they all know Rabbi Potasnik.
Of course, yeah.
But you have world leaders coming in where a lot of them have a high threat level. And here's your New York City police officers keeping people safe on such a level that you really can't have that opportunity in any other position that you could ever have.
Well, let me ask you a question. To what degree do you have to make adjustments? I know the police department has made some great adjustments, expressing or demonstrating, should I say, sensitivity to individual beliefs. But as an Orthodox Jew, let's say you have a call that takes you to a Christian church, let's say, with symbols of the cross, et cetera. Is there a problem going into that house of worship?
Not at all.
How does that work? Orthodox Jews won't go in. Yeah.
Well, I got to tell you, I've actually seen a Rabbi Potasnik at more midnight masses at St. Patrick's Cathedral.
Yeah, he's been spotted. Him and Elvis have been spotted.
Oh, you're
there,
right,
yeah.
Sitting on the front row.
Overseeing the collection.
It's like it's the mayor, the police commissioner, Rabbi Potasnik. Not necessarily in that order. But Like I said, when you're a police officer in New York City, you're one of everyone. Whether it's going to a church, going into a mosque, going into a Buddhist temple, going to a synagogue, you're there to serve, you're there to help. And certainly, it's a responsibility that's taken seriously by every police officer, no matter what your faith is, no matter what your religious belief is, you're there for everyone. So I don't, there'll be no police officer, you know, from the Jewish religion that should ever hesitate going into a church, especially if you think about it. The churches in New York City, they're so welcoming. They want to see the police. You know, the communities out there ask for the police to be there more. The meetings that I go to, whether it's Zoom calls, whether it's in person, conference calls, you name it. The number one request is we want to see the police, patrol officers, community affairs officers. They want to do things with the police. They want to do projects with them, community organizations. They want to get together. And it's just tremendous. It shows that not only are we trusted, but we're wanted. And not wanted the way that Robbie Potasnik wanted.
But let me just tell you, there's another aspect to this. Over the years, there have been many tragic events, unfortunately, happening in houses of worship.
Yes.
There were fires that occurred in houses of worship.
Yes.
You have Christian firefighters, Christian police, very often going into those hostile environments. You have saving a Torah, rescuing individuals. So, think of the people of other faiths who are there to save lives, save Torahs of those of different faiths.
So, correct. It's such a strong sentiment that you're saying. I remember about 10 years ago, there was a fire in a synagogue on East 27th Street by Avenue K in the Midwood section of Brooklyn. And firefighters came in, put out the fire, saved, I think it was four, a Sifrei Torah, four of these Torahs. They were saved. And I remember that a couple of firefighters went to the hospital from it. And me with a few other people, I remember we went to the hospital with food. We got some food from a deli, soup, sandwiches, and we brought it to the firefighters who were hurt in that fire. Say thank you. Say that we recognize that you came in to save, you know, religious articles. You came in to save people. You know, thank God. Thank everyone was out with no injuries. But yeah, it's about appreciation. You know, the foundation of Judaism is Hakar Satov. It means appreciation for good. And showing that appreciation, that mutual respect, and everything that comes with it. It's just like one great city, and it's something that makes our city just the greatest city in the world.
You know, police officers see the best of us as human beings and the worst of us as human beings.
Yes.
And you have to balance your response to that reality. Have you encountered situations where here you are a law enforcement officer and encountering a citizen, right, who may have a problem with your Jewish identity? How do you handle something like that?
So
that can be quite challenging, you know.
Yes, when it gets personal. So thank God, I've never seen that personal attack like that to me in that type of way. Yes, we've gone to a lot of protests. We've handled probably at this point, maybe 800 protests, maybe more at this point, since October. Certainly there's a lot of concern in the city about global events, but thank God you don't see the discord that you've seen in the past on that type of level. Yes, there are a few professional agitators as we see. Yes, there are people that come in from maybe out of state, maybe paid professional agitators that just want to take advantage of a situation. But when it comes down to it, like the people of New York City especially are good people and they're respectful people. But yes, like you said, Reverend Bernard, yes, there may be some people that may see a religious symbol on someone, a yarmulke, a cross, a turban, a hijab, and may say things to instigate that police officer, may say things to try to get a response out of it, may say things to want to just be hurtful about it. But when it comes to that, I think police officers are professional. Me, myself, I would feel bad for a person like that because racism is based upon ignorance. And I know that the work that you do, Reverend Bernard, I know the work that you do with Rabbi Potasnik, I know it's felt in the city. And the message of love, the message of unity, certainly outshines any type of hate speech. And just to say something very powerful that Rabbi Potasnik actually taught me. Rabbi Potasnik taught me that it's very hard to hate up close. And when we see each other, when we really sit down with each other, when you know each other, you really can't hate another one. You really can't hate. And it's just about that relationship, that dialogue. So, like you, but Reverend Bernard, like you said, a great question. You know, should someone say something to try to instigate someone using their personal religious belief or maybe their race, maybe their orientation, whatever it is? I think that, you know, by and large, police officers have thick skin. And we would just feel sorry for that person who feels they, you know, should say something like that.
You know, it's interesting. You speak of a great department, and all of us are so appreciative of the loyalty to community.
Yes.
However, numbers when it comes to recruitment are down. I understand there are 6,000 fewer police now than there have been. It's difficult in the present to get people, when they see some of the challenges you have to face, not necessarily with criminals, but in terms of, you know, the disrespect, even by some of the elected. They say, I don't want to get into that arena. Why should I be subjected to that kind of behavior? How do you counter that? You know, saying to someone, I wanted to be a policeman, but I see what you go through. I see with, you know, things that are said to you and about you. I'm not interested anymore.
It's a great question, Rabbi Potasnik, and I think I could answer it with what we're doing right here, right now. Me on the radio explaining so many great opportunities you have in the police department. If you want to jump out of a helicopter, we got that. You want to ride a horse.
I know the Reverend does, by the way.
Of course,
he often says
of course
to me,
I do.
I just want to jump out of a helicopter.
Yeah, yeah. I will tell you, look, full disclosure, my wife jumped out of a plane. She invited me, and I said, no, you got this.
So we offer great opportunities. You know, you want to ride a boat. Like I mentioned, you want to be on the internet looking for potential terrorism activity. We have police officers assigned to other countries around the world. If you think about it, we give so many opportunities to be who you want to be as a New York City police officer. And I personally am so proud of the position that I have. I would encourage anyone listening that may feel that they would make a good police officer, take the test free of charge. See the opportunities you have. See the promotional opportunities that you have. The detective track. You'll really get a sense of tremendous fulfillment by the work that you do here. And it's something that is second to none. So, but yes, right, Potasnik, like you said, we're looking always for the best of the best. As the saying goes, New York's finest needs New York's finest. Mm-hmm. And yes, we actively recruit. There's just a time where you get a lot of applicants, time you get less applicants, but, I think the job is still, I know the job is still a great job. Yes, some challenges in law enforcement, but there's always been challenges in law enforcement. We saw the riots from a few years back. You know, there was some crazy motto going around, something like defund the police or something like that. And that is now dead. You don't hear that anymore because people realize how ridiculous it was. It just doesn't make sense. I'm hearing from communities of color. They're saying refund the police. That took over. Mm-hmm. Just that relationship that we have with clergy leaders, the relationship that we have with civic organizations, think that people see the pride of a police officer. I personally believe it's the most prestigious job in New York City. Mm. And
next to FDNY.
You know, obviously.
You know, Reverend Bernard is an honorary chaplain. I'm a chaplain FDNY, and Reverend is an honorary. So be careful.
No bias. You
have the finest. We have the bravest. So, you know.
But you know what? Let me tell you something. I just listening to you, right, I would have a camera on you, and we would be knocking out one PSA after another. The whole idea that whatever you want to be or do, we got it. The police department has it. And you just listed a number of things that individuals would love to be specifically involved with. It takes away from the image of the uniformed cop on the beat, on the street, running into all the problems in the neighborhoods. I mean, you just bring a different perspective on it. What's happening? Is something going on to change the messaging that you know of?
We're doing it right now. Like I mentioned, so many opportunities. You know, in police department, we have the youth strategies division. You want to help kids. You want to bring kids into a room. We have great community centers across the city. We have something called the Options Program. The Options Program gives kids the options in life on how you can learn a trade, be who you want to be, live your life to your fullest potential. And as a police officer, we can bring that home to kids. How much more rewarding position could you have than to help a child, help a kid grow, help a kid, you know, build a self-esteem? We do job training for kids. We get a barber. We give haircuts to them. We'll buy them a suit, shirt, and tie. We'll teach them how to make a tie. We'll teach them how to interview for a job, not just for the police department, for anything they want to do. We'll teach them interview tactics on how to interview for a job they want. It's just a tremendous, tremendous opportunity. We have the cricket, you know, soccer league, the cricket league that we do. There's just so much that we're doing. Saturday Night Lights. If you go online, you go to the NYPD's website for community affairs, you'll see program after program after program. That's just tremendous. And again, those opportunities are amazing. You know, they say when it comes to, Robert Ptasek taught me this as well, and they say when it comes to giving charity, one would think that the person who's giving the charity to the receiver is losing and the receiver is the one that's gaining. But in reality, how many times is the person getting the most is the person who's actually the one giving? Mm-hmm. When you give that self-satisfaction, the person who's giving really ultimately is the one that gets the most out of it.
By the way, I would just add that in the world of clergy, recruitment is difficult also. I mean, we're finding it in many cases.
Very good point.
So,
Great point.
You have people who look at, I don't know what profession is easy. Although someone once told me, be a dermatologist. That's easy. But every profession has its very difficult times, very problematic areas. But to me, that should inspire you that you can make a difference and face those challenges.
Yes, absolutely. There's two things that I'll say. One, if something comes easy to you, it's usually not worth it. When it's difficult, when you had to work hard for it, that means that the results are going to be worth it. About what you just said about what profession is easiest, I think weathermen. You can never be wrong. It may rain, it may snow, it may be clear. It's just amazing. We were just at the Police Athletic League luncheon about a week or two ago with John Catsimatidis. The police commissioner was a guest speaker. Edward Caban. He said a lot of things very, very powerful. But the way he speaks, the way people gravitate towards him, the way that he has the persona of that respect, that he represents the police department as the head. I think we live in a time now where, yes, we'll have issues with the legislative branch. We may have issues with the judicial branch. But in the police department, you know, as a unit, as an agency, we're very fortunate to have the leadership that we have now, best leadership that we've ever had in so many different ways as to now. And I think that the opportunities, the time to become a police officer is right here, right now.
They could not have a better representative. By the way, let me just say, I have friends who are dermatologists. It's not easy. They went through a lot. They went through a lot to get there. And I respect, you know, all the people who've made sacrifices to enter their profession. Richard Taylor, deputy chief. Although he reminds me that his wife also remains the chief. He may be the deputy chief. His wife is the chief. I think it's a proud moment for the Jewish community. I think it's for the New York community, NYPD, because it sends a message to so many people that you can maintain your religious principles, not have to compromise when you enter the service of the police department.
Correct. Exactly right. And that's thanks to the leadership of the police department. It's thanks to the sensitivity. It's thanks to the work of the clergy leaders like yourself, right, Ptasek, Reverend Bernard. You know, your relationship to the mayor, your relationship to the police commissioner, you explaining the sensitivities needed from your backgrounds, you explaining when a holiday is coming up, like the holiday of Purim, the holiday of Passover coming up, holiday of Easter coming up, that you explain, you know, what the communities are going to be celebrating and when, and bringing out the police commissioner, bringing out the mayor, and the police officers see that. It just screams unity. It just screams love. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful moment. And that's what makes our city the greatest city.
Well said.
It's been a pleasure having you on the program. Yeah.
My pleasure, Bernard. Thank you, Reverend Bernard.
And again, you know, we as a city should be proud of having a police officer such as yourself representing what it's really all about. Too often, the negative voices have the microphone and, you know, they're the loudest. It's been a pleasure. Really has been a pleasure.
So promise us you'll come back when you become commissioner of NYPD, that you won't forget us. Look, you know, I tell you, Rev, I'm looking at this deputy chief, and I knew him when, and I've watched him grow over the years. And to see someone who reaches this level, but has always been a person of principle. He really hasn't changed when it comes to his moral values. He's grown, he's taller, all that, but internally, he's the same person. And I think, you know, that's something that really is a great message to all who seek to enter the arena. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you, Reverend. Thank you, Reverend A. Bernard. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I mean, should meet again for good, happy, joyous occasions.
Deputy Chief Taylor, are there any special programs for the faith-based community that you offer at NYPD?
Absolutely. Commissioner Stewart, Community Affairs, tasked me to start an NYPD clergy unit under the Community Affairs Bureau. The clergy unit is specifically designed for outreach to houses of worship, like you said, faith-based organizations, to be there proactively before holidays. God forbid, should a hate crime occur against a community, against a house of worship, we're there for the sensitivity for the community, because an attack on one person because of their way of life is an attack on that entire community. And we'll never allow that to happen, which is why, yes, we have that clergy unit in place. And not just for the clergy, but for kids. You know, before Christmas, Chief Madry, you know, Chief Department of Community Affairs, we have a sleigh ride. We deliver tens of thousands of toys to kids across the city who may not be able to receive a present. You know, there's a lot of pain behind many apartment doors in the city. And we're there delivering presents. We get characters. You go online, you just Google NYPD sleigh ride. You'll see beautiful things we do before Christmas. We do turkey giveaways before Thanksgiving. So you're doing a lot of great things.
Thank you.
Wow. And there you have it. Community policing is not just enforcing the law, but building relationships. And stay tuned for more of The Rev and the Rabbi right here on 77 WABC. We'll be right back.
Rabbi Joseph Potasnik. The Parker Jewish Institute for Healthcare and Rehabilitation has been providing care and services to older adults for over 115 years. Their dedicated and experienced team of experts deliver care, whether it be in your home or theirs. Parker is there for you. Chronic long-term health care needs can seem overwhelming, especially when a crisis happens. Parker offers short-term rehabilitation and long-term care, as well as home care, hospice, and medical home visits. Parker even offers specialized on-site services and programs such as dialysis, palliative care, and vascular services. And through the Parker Jewish Institute Foundation, the Willing Hearts Helpful Hands Program provides free assistance to family caregivers of individuals with Alzheimer's disease and other dementias to provide much-needed support so they can continue to care for their loved ones at home. Visit ParkerInstitute.org to learn more and access services today. That's ParkerInstitute.org or call 877-727-5373.
Why get an updated COVID vaccine? If you're 65 or older, a COVID vaccine can keep you out of the hospital. And if you have heart disease, a COVID vaccine can help you stay healthy. With COPD or other lung diseases, getting a COVID vaccine can keep you off a ventilator. Anyone can get severely ill from COVID. But some people are more at risk. Know your risk and make sure you're up to date on your COVID vaccine. A message from the New York State Health Department.
Here's what's coming to the historic St. George Theater on Staten Island. March 23rd, the Godmother of Soul, Patti LaBelle. March 30th, celebrating Meatloaf with the Neverland Express and American Idol winner Caleb Johnson playing all of Meatloaf's hits. April 20th, it's Tommy James and the Shondells with the Box Tops. For tickets for these shows and so much more, go to Ticketmaster.com or the St. George Theater box office, just two blocks from the Staten Island Ferry.
Hey, everybody, it's Sid from the number one Nielsen-rated News Talk morning show, Sid and Friends in the Morning. During the week, I wake up New York City and the world. But on Sundays, I leave that to my good friend and our boss, the great John Catsimatidis and the Cats Roundtable. Coming up next, right here on Talk Radio 77 WABC. I'll be listening. So will you.
Reverend A.R. Bernard, Rabbi Joseph Potasnik, the Rev and the Rabbi. Talk Radio 77 WABC and the all-new WABCRadio.com.
Welcome back. I'm Rabbi Joseph Potasnik.
And I'm Reverend A.R. Bernard.
Reverend, I was talking to someone who said to me recently, he walked by a store and there was a sign in the window that says, "We treat you like family." He says, "Uh-oh, I'm not going in there." We have someone today who We treat his family. He treats us as family, and it's a wonderful relationship. I'm talking about the great controller of the state of New York, the Honorable Thomas P. DiNapoli. Controller, welcome.
Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you, Rev. It's great to be back on the show with you.
And by the way, Rev, not only is he a guest, he's a loyal listener.
Yes, indeed.
Often he'll call me with his criticism of what you say.
I always say Dr. Bernard is right on.
He doesn't have to call me. That's the point.
I give Rabbi Joe constructive criticism. Yeah. That's how it works.
One of the guests on the program today, Mr. Controller, Richard Taylor, who just appointed deputy chief NYPD, Orthodox Jew. First time, the highest-ranking Orthodox Jew in the department. You're a controller. You're a proud Catholic. Mm-hmm. You're a person who's been probably to more synagogues than you have churches over the years. But you're proud of your faith. And I think it's very important that people see that you don't have to camouflage your identity to be a successful leader. Because, you know, too often in history, people were not able to wear the Star of David, the yarmulke, the cross or whatever, they'd have to hide it because they fear they wouldn't get the position. That's change. Not completely, but at least, you know, a great, great improvement from where we were.
Well, for me, it's also a source of strength, you know. So I find that, especially given the pace of the work that an elected official often has to deal with, to have that time, an hour a week, to be at Mass, in my case, is really a time of reflection, kind of closing out the noise of day-to-day effort. So, for me, it's something that has meaning, and I think I'm sure I said to you, Rabbi, and maybe I've said on the show as well, it's a time for me to reflect on the people in my life who are no longer with us. Time for prayer, for my late parents, as an example. And all that's very important to me because it gives me strength. I think it's important for people in public life not to try to use, their religion as a political advantage, right? Sometimes I think that gets abused. I'm not pointing fingers at anybody in particular, but you know it when you see it. But I think there's no reason not to be proud of your heritage and to celebrate it. And also, for me, having gone to other faith traditions, and I've had the privilege to be a Christian cultural center and hear Dr. Bernard and certainly Rabbi many synagogues and services that you presided at. Having my grounding in Catholicism has helped me better understand the other traditions as well and really appreciate the commonality between the different traditions, certainly between Judaism and Christianity, but as well, Muslim, Hindu, Sikh, all the other wonderful religions that we have here in the greater New York area. And to me, it's a wonderful gift. And given the challenging times we're going through, I wish more people would lean into their faith. I think we'd all be better off for it.
And let me say something. I was at a meeting Saturday morning, the weekend of the Black, Latino, and Asian Caucus in Albany. And I'm working with the new director of the governor's new Office of Faith and Not-for-Profit Services. And we had a meeting that morning. And as I'm exiting the meeting, I see this Tom DiNapoli-sponsored clergy breakfast that was historically done by you. Is that true that you have sponsored a gathering of clergy as part of that weekend?
We do it, we do it in coordination with the caucus staff. Actually, this year we did a reception the night before, but we have sponsored the clergy breakfast. And, having been there, there are many activities going on simultaneously.
It's loaded. It's a loaded weekend.
So this year actually we did the reception, but we have been a sponsor of the clergy breakfast as well. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was told. Wow. Yeah. I people don't know some of the things that go on behind the scenes. But you live, and I've had the pleasure of knowing you over the years, and we still got to do lunch. I haven't forgotten. but you live in an awareness of, I would say, and I can say this, the presence of God in many, many ways. with what you do within society. Not everyone lives in that awareness and sensitivity and the sense that we're held to a higher accountability because there's a higher authority above us. But you live that out on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I think, and I'm sure, Pastor, you and I have talked about it. You know, it was instilled in me early on. It really was a gift from my, starting my immigrant grandparents, and certainly my parents, particularly my mother growing up, you know, probably in the 50s and 60s, tradition was that, you know, the women were the ones that, you know, transmitted religious training and sensibility. And it's interesting, my dad, who lived to 92, lived many years, my mother passed at a relatively young age, my dad, in his later years, rediscovered the importance of religion and faith. He had been an altar boy and all of that as a young man, wasn't as observant as my mother had been in some of the years we were growing up. But in his later years, very much felt the presence of God. And so I think for me, that's just something that's been instilled in me and role models, you know, in my family home. And I mean, look, for a lot of immigrants of my grandparents' generation, they came here with nothing. And they only got through it because they had faith in God, that there was a bigger and better plan out there, no matter what adversity they were going through. And, I think my parents held on to that as well. And I consider it a very special gift to have. And it means a lot to me. Given how crazy the world is right now, I feel bad for people that don't believe in something bigger and better than we are.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Controller, yeah. You've always been a loyal, loving supporter of the State of Israel. And you've been there many times. You just returned from another trip. And I think this trip was somewhat transformative for you. You saw things that you hadn't seen before. Talk about it.
Well, this certainly was a very different trip, given everything going on there. Actually, it was my sixth visit to Israel, and it was the shortest in terms of duration, but it was part of a solidarity mission sponsored by Jewish Community Relations Council of New York. And it wasn't the usual, see the different sites. It was really one to get a sense as to what the country is going through since the October 7th attack. And you know, I would observe this when people ask me what was the mood there. Israel is a country in mourning. It's a country in shock. I have to say, everybody we spoke to, whatever, you know, political persuasion they may have come from or whatever their background or profession, it's still with a sense of disbelief as to what happened on October 7th. The brutality of the attack by Hamas, the fact that the Israel intelligence and military obviously failed to protect the citizenry, and the fact that there are still so many hostages still being held. I mean, this is a trauma that continues. And as we all know from, you know, following what's going on there, there's obviously trauma on the other side of the border, you know, in Gaza. And it is a region, I think, uncertain as to where it's all headed. But certainly the sense from the Israelis is that they must do whatever they can to get the hostages back, number one, but number two, make sure that this kind of an attack would not happen again. There could be debate about how that's achieved. Obviously, there's debate about that. But I guess I would also say the resilience of the Israelis is still there. The commitment to be sure that that it is a nation state that will survive. And it is the only Jewish state on the globe, and it's important that that security be there and be preserved.
Yeah, I would love to hear you expand on what you just said. I think it's so important. You said Israel is a state in mourning, and they're not just mourning their own loss of life, the loss of Jewish life, but they're mourning the reality of having to be at war, to engage in this kind of violence. Would you say that?
Absolutely. I think they're
and you know why? Because there are those who think that the state of Israel is taking pleasure in engaging in violence acts. You know what I mean? And that's why what you said is so important.
Not at all. No, not at all. I mean, it's such an important point. Look, they've been in a tough neighborhood since their founding, and they've had struggles and wars, you know, over the years. But I think they had reached a point, if I could generalize, with a basic sense of security. That security was shattered by what happened on October 7th. You know, the fact that thousands of terrorists were able to come in and so many innocent lives were lost. And I do believe there's empathy for the innocent lives being lost on the other side of the border. But but hostages have to be returned. And security has to be guaranteed. And you look at some of the rhetoric coming from the other side, that there's no sense that they understand that. I mean, again, I'm generalizing, but I think that that's a fair concern. You know, you just think about it. We went down to the south, and we visited one of the kibbutz that was overrun, Kfar Aza. And you look at the kibbutzim, and Rabbi, you know, back me up on this. I think I'm saying it correctly. The kibbutzim tend to be the most progressive and left in Israeli society, the ones most advocating for peace, the ones who would have Palestinians coming over the border to work, you know, in their farms and fields. They were the ones who bore much of the brunt of this attack. They are the ones who were in the most disbelief that they had been, you know, certainly not supportive generally. Again, I'm generalizing of the Netanyahu government, and they were the ones who suffered the greatest loss. And you know, we met with a young woman who survived the Nova Music Festival. I mean, they descended on this. You know, this remember too, it was a Jewish holiday, right? It was the end of Sukkot, beginning of Simchat Torah.
Correct.
You know, and then all of a sudden, you know, all these folks are coming through, gliding in motorcycles and puncturing what everybody over there thought was a security line, and just randomly picking off all these young people. And you know, you go there, and because they celebrate each life, you know, we were at the kibbutz. You saw a house that was burned or destroyed, but they had a picture of the person who was either kidnapped or killed there. You went to the music festival site. They had a picture and a stand for every person that was killed or kidnapped there. And they're planting in another part of that site trees in the name of each person, you know, who was a victim, you know, with a sense of hope and renewal for the future. I guess I'd sum it up this way. We met with someone who was retired from IDF and was called up again. And when they heard about the attacks, he said that his wife said, "They're coming for us." And I think that was that sense of that shattered sense of security, that there was that this is an onslaught coming. And, you know, I guess I wish leaving there, you know, Pastor, I wish I had a sense as to what would be the way to conclude all this. I mean, the easy answer is let the hostages out and let's get back to some negotiation. But it's probably not that simple. But anybody that thinks that the Israelis are divided, they're very much united. Hostages have to come back and security has to be reinstated.
You know, I'm glad you said that because, Control, I hear all the calls for a ceasefire. And if that means return of Hamas, a terrorist organization that openly declares its determination to destroy not just Israel, but Jews, then that's unacceptable.
Yeah.
You can't have, you know, things the way they were. And the fact that on October the 5th, October the 6th, there was a ceasefire all the time before the 7th, a ceasefire. And look what happened there.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You now, you know, having the Israelis saying, no, we can't go back to the way things were because we do not want to lose lives again because of such an attack. So
and they've been there before. I mean, what I'd recommend, you know, to your listeners, if they haven't seen it, and I saw the movie before October 7th, and I saw it actually on the plane ride back to America. See the movie Golda.
Mm-hmm.
Helen Mirren. Fabulous performance. But. It was so much like the Yom Kippur War,
mm-hmm.
a surprise attack on a Jewish holiday, and a shattering of a sense of security. They've seen this picture before, and I think the Israelis were really taken aback that it happened again. Obviously, there's a need for a lot of rebuilding in Israel, and they're looking for more support with the bonds. We actually, New York has purchased another $95 million worth of State of Israel bonds. Right. So that commitment continues.
Yeah. So let me ask you, New York. Let's talk about New York.
Oh, can I say one last thing on Israel before you get
course,
to New York?
Of course, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
And you'll tell me if I'm violating, you know, privilege by saying this. We went to the Western Wall. That was one of the, you know, stops we did. And I put in the message to God, and the message only was three words: peace, peace, peace. And I hope by saying that, God will say, you're not supposed to say that out loud. But I think that's what we all must continue to work towards and pray for the Palestinians, for the Israelis, for the entire world community. So much conflict going on right now. In 2024, we shouldn't be in this state of affairs. Let's all pray for peace. Let's get back to that, you know, as Reverend said, that belief in God and that there is a better plan out there.
And that you put that note in Hebrew impresses me even more. That you have that ability.
Well, it wasn't in Hebrew, it wasn't in Italian, but it was a very clear English.
Yeah. So let's talk about New York before we let you go.
Yep.
You've heard all the prognosticators saying that New York is on the decline, and it's not going to come back. And if it come back, it would be very diminished, and people are leaving, companies are leaving. Talk to that.
Well, look, we have struggles. Some of those struggles have been there for a while. Many of those struggles were accentuated by the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic and the close down, all that. We are still recovering. We've gotten back about 95% of the jobs that were lost, so we still have a bit to go. We do have a loss of taxpayers and population. It is not as severe as the critics say, but it is a pattern that continues. You know, it's gotten a little better. It was worse, you know, during the pandemic, but you know, there are challenges out there. I mean, you know, we all are in New York City on a regular basis. We still don't have everybody returning to the workplace, to the offices. That's having an impact on the economy, especially in the Central Business District. The workplace has been transformed, right? Many places are, you know, if not fully remote, at least partially remote. That's having an impact on the economy. The state budget that the governor presented, that's being negotiated now, I think is realistic in terms of the numbers. There'll always be debate about how you specifically spend the money. But we have to face the reality that while the economic picture and the revenues coming in are a bit better than we would have said 6-9 months ago, you know, the economy is still somewhat volatile, uncertain as to where we're headed. And all the federal money that really kept New York City afloat, New York State afloat, that's, you know, being spent down now. And we have these expenses that were never budgeted for. You know, 2 years ago, we weren't talking about billions of dollars to have to be spent on a migrant crisis and money to support the asylum seekers. You know, we need the federal government to step up on a policy level to do some different things, but also to help New York City and New York State get through all this. So there are some real fiscal challenges out there. But, I think, as I said, on balance, it's not as bad as the critics say. We all have to do a lot more to keep this recovery going. And, you know, to my friends in the legislature and the same for our friends in the city council here, be realistic as far as the budget. There are out-year budget gaps, both for the city and the state, that we must make sure won't get worse by decisions being made in the upcoming budget negotiations, both in Albany and in at City Hall.
Controller, I like what you said. We'll get through this. As we end on a positive note with hope. You're in finance, and you know that the numbers tell a story that it's cyclical.
Yes.
Economics, it's cyclical. Yep. You know, there are highs and lows. We go through these periods, and, you know, things change. But it's not like this is where we stay, correct?
Absolutely right. And of late, the numbers have been bad. Hey, look, I'm always concerned about, you know, the markets because of the pension fund, you know, that I'm responsible for. Mm-hmm. The markets have been much better, you know. So there's as much good. In fact, I'd argue there's more good that we're seeing in the numbers than numbers of concern. But there's still work to be done. Mm. We have to make smart choices when we're talking about spending and budgeting.
So you're optimistic about the future. And keep in mind, you're on WABC talk radio.
I believe in God. I'm optimistic for the future, and I believe in the people of New York. This is still the best place to be. It's with the most creative and resilient people. We will figure out how to get through it and get to a better place.
Controller.
And amen to that. That's good preaching, Rabbi.
Yeah, it is. And Controller, thank you. Your willingness to send me the Reverend's unclaimed funds.
Okay, here we go.
Because I know now I can look forward to a very prosperous retirement.
Thank you both. It's always great to be on your show.
Just thank you for always being there, not only for Israel during this, for the people of the state, for people who are hurting. You are, I'm a Catholic with a small C. You're a Catholic with a capital C and a small C. We appreciate you for who you are and all that you do. We're grateful.
God bless. Wait. God bless all of you and your listeners. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. God bless. And stay tuned. We'll be right back with more of the Rev and the Rabbi here on 77 WABC.
A station built just for you. Entertaining talk, information, and New York opinions.
That is the stupidest, dumbest, most idiotic idea I ever heard of.
The world famous and American original. Talk Radio 77 WABC and WABCRadio.com. The Parker Jewish Institute for Healthcare and Rehabilitation is a proud sponsor of the Reb and the Rabbi. Since 1907, Parker's pioneering spirit and unwavering commitment to superior patient care in a warm and supportive environment has been their mantra. Go to parkerinstitute.org.
You ever heard of naloxone?
Naloxone? No.
Me neither, until last night at that party. Someone yelled, "Jen overdosed." A guy ran up and put this spray in her nose. It was naloxone. Saved her life.
Wow, sounds like having naloxone around is a really good idea.
Right? And anyone can get it for free at most pharmacies in New Jersey. No questions asked.
I'm definitely checking this out.
Visit stopoverdoses.nj.gov to see how you can get naloxone free from the New Jersey Department of Human Services.
At some point, you're going to need to call a funeral chapel. So my suggestion, do a little research before you need to do the research. It's a very different experience learning about the services of a funeral chapel before you have to call one. At Plaza Jewish Community Chapel, we are open for tours. We urge you to visit our website and do a price comparison, because it's not inexpensive to bury a family member or friend. Why make that important decision under duress? At Plaza Jewish Community Chapel, we urge you to take action and be well informed. Call us to set up a tour or to meet with a director, and call us to learn more about end-of-life decision-making. We're all going to need it. Call 212-769-4400. That's 212-769-4400, or visit plazajewish.org. Where being of service to the community is our number one objective.
This is Rabbi Joseph Potasnik. When the Rev and the Rabbi are done here, we keep listening to 77 WABC as our fearless leader John Catsimatidis is about to take the microphone on the Cats Roundtable, where common sense prevails, coming up next.
77 WABC.
Where faith matters. The Rev and the Rabbi. Talk Radio 77 WABC.
Welcome back. I'm Rabbi Joseph Potasnik.
And I'm Reverend A.R. Bernard.
Reverend, it was, I thought, an extraordinary program. And walk away, we say, there are some great people in the world, and we are privileged to know them. And I think we can look forward to some very promising times in our lives with such people who are in leadership positions.
You know, something's wrong with you if you don't walk away from this broadcast with hope.
Mm-hmm.
Both of our guests gave us hope for the future. And I think that's what it's all about.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Yeah. Thank you, our listeners. We'll be back next week. Same time, same channel. WABC, the Rev.
And the Rabbi.
A station built just for you. Entertaining talk, information, and New York opinions.
You are a ball of fire.
The world famous and American original. Talk Radio 77 WABC and WABCRadio.com. This is New York's talk leader, the crown jewel of talk radio. WABC New York and 107.1 WLIR Hampton Bays. 77 WABC News starts now.
49 and sunny on this Sunday, March 3rd. Good morning. I'm Liz Radabali. The threat of a government shutdown is over.